Saddle up your horses.
Welcome to the Robin Walters Show and our podcast. This is a first for us, the first time we've ever done a podcast 2 days in a row. If you did not hear yesterday's, done on January 7th, 2022, you've got to hear it. It's called January 6th, Joe Biden and the SS. And today we are going to cover, I guess we'd kind of call this part two, dealing with January 6th. But we're going to have a special guest on the program, which we taped actually just a short while earlier, which I will bring in here in just a minute, dealing with the issue again of the IRS, maybe they're involved, but the FBI and the role of informants, the role of undercover agents, and when does the activity of our government become entrapment? And this picks up entirely from where we left off yesterday, dealing with the discussing the SS under Hitler and what the SS is under Joe Biden. And so with that, I am going to bring in the interview of Mr. Billy Sims.
Touched on yesterday. I want to just give a little bit of a synopsis, maybe in a couple of minutes or less, for new listeners listening to this program, which really need to hear the program that was podcasted yesterday, dealing with January 7th, dealing with the Joe Biden and the new SS. But I want to start with an explanation that we began yesterday with, and that is the definition of the word insurrection. We keep hearing this word from the left, the mainstream legacy media. Obviously, it's not an insurrection in the technical sense of the word, because I'm going to read to you again the legal definition of insurrection, just to put the mainstream media on notice. Because an insurrection, by nature, by definition, is armed. And because these people weren't armed, it's why the mainstream media has to put the adjective armed in front of the insurrection. Because actually, it's actually a redundancy, because an insurrection is something that is takes place when people are armed. I'm sorry, it's a tough one to say, because they weren't guilty of trespassing. I mean, they're guilty of trespassing, but not of an insurrection, and they would never get a conviction on it. So let me read for a minute here the definition of insurrection. So here is the definition. An insurrection means a violent armed uprising by a group or a movement acting for the specific purpose of overthrowing the constituted government and seizing its powers. An insurrection occurs where a movement acts to overthrow the constituted government and take possession of its inherent powers. End quote. It is by nature violent. And you don't have violence unless you've got arms. And why is this a legal definition? It's because it's the definition that has been used in the law coming out of a case, Yunus Brothers and Company versus Cigna Worldwide Insurance Company, Eastern District of Pennsylvania in 1995. So we know that this was not an insurrection. It's trespassing. That's the most that can be said. So when we also discussed yesterday what Joe Biden's SS looks like, we talked about the Saul Schutz, which was the equivalent in 1925 of our Secret Service. Interestingly and coincidentally, also known as the SS, Secret Service, but no comparison. It's a legitimate branch of government paid for by the government to protect the president. No problem with that. And that was how Hitler's SS started out, but it didn't stay as the Saul Schutz. It became the Schutzstaffel. And by the late 30s, it was only partly paid, meaning the paid staff of the Secret Service, but their equivalent, but it expanded. It expanded to include more paid staff, and mostly, and this is what's significant, is the Schutzstaffel was largely voluntary. Voluntary. It was those who were brought in on a voluntary broad basis to intimidate, harass, suppress, and ultimately to crush all political dissent against the regime. And that's what we've got here. Joe the regime Biden, masquerading as an administration, but it's becoming more of a regime. And so who are those volunteers today? Who is the today's Schutzstaffel, today's SS, the volunteers? Well, it'd be big tech, Google, Facebook, Twitter. But this question that is legitimately arising here is, has the FBI become part of the Schutzstaffel? Are they actually the paid portion kind of an SS? I mean, do we have Joe der Fuhrer Biden here? Or the FBI protecting the broader definition of the extremist left beyond just the administration of one individual? Well, we're going to try to find that out today, because the FBI is struggling in the public trust department. From the deplorable four-year effort to dethrone and take out Trump with all the lies, the Russian hoax, we've got the despicable James Comey and those under him, his minions, spending millions with his minions on taking out the president. We've got many former FBI agents saying that today FBI doesn't relate or look at all like J. Edgar Hoover's FBI, whatever you thought of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. And of course, most recently, we've got the FBI thinking that it is a major federal crime because possibly somebody's diary was stolen and carried across state lines, i.e. Ashley Biden's diary, which apparently expressed some support for Trump, but most certainly, and she's admitted it, has a statement in there that she took, quote, probably inappropriate showers with her father, end quote. But do you call in the Praetorian Guard, the FBI here, to chase down which it wasn't stolen? The FBI knew it wasn't stolen. James O'Keefe turned it over to authorities, and he didn't get it by illicit means. But is that what they're out there to suppress and ultimately crush all possible political dissent? All of which takes us up now to the role of the FBI on January 6th, but we are going to start with the FBI's role in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping case as the prelude to the January 6th matter. And to that extent, I have a very special guest on the program today, Billy Sims. Billy Sims is retired. I'm going to let him tell a bit of his own story, but he worked as an undercover investigator, and he's going to distinguish for us the difference between working undercover as an investigator, which apparently is what the FBI was doing, and what an informant is. And then we're going to start to relate that to the facts that we know of surrounding the Whitmer matter. So, Billy, welcome to the Robin Walter Show.
Good morning.
I'm thrilled to have you on here. Billy, just give us a little bit of your background, and if you're okay with it, who you worked for, and even further, who you infiltrated.
Okay. I am retired from the San Francisco Police Department. I was employed by the San Francisco Police Department during the turbulent 1960s, when domestic terrorism was on the uprise. There was a committee, the McClellan Committee, House Un-American Activities Committee, and they had an interest in what was going on in the Bay Area, terrorism in the Bay Area, domestic terrorism. And so many of the groups that were active in the Bay Area were the Black Panthers, Black Liberation Army, Students for Democratic Society, Communist Party USA, Progressive Labor Party. I had an opportunity to infiltrate and tangentially touch upon a number of those groups, because what I did, I went out to San Francisco State University, enrolled as a student, and that's where many of the groups were active, and many of the leaders were actually recruiting from the campus. In fact, there were leaders of those organizations that were not even students, but they were recruiting students. As a member of the San Francisco Police Department, I was assigned to the intelligence unit as an investigator. The difference between an investigator and an informant is someone that is a civilian, and usually informants have a problem with the criminal justice system, and they have an opportunity to redeem themselves by cooperating with law enforcement and helping law enforcement do certain things. In the area of narcotics, for example, when I was, before I worked in the intelligence unit, I worked in narcotics. And what we would do is someone that had a criminal charge pending would help and assist us in getting into organized drug groups.
Okay. So let me just interject here a second. So you're saying an informant is a criminal. He's not getting paid, he or she, to necessarily do that. They're trying to in there. They're in there to try to recover some ground they're lost. But an undercover investigator, you're paid by San Francisco PD to infiltrate an organization,
Exactly.
And what organizations were you called upon to investigate?
I'm sorry, say that.
What organizations were you tasked with infiltrating?
Well, they gave me a free hand and they said, hey, we want you to just get out and see who tries to suck you in, because, again, they were trying to pull me in. But they had an interest in all the groups in the Bay Area, Communist Party, Black Panthers, Black Liberation Army, Progressive Labor, SDF. I could not actually get into the Black Panthers because I grew up and knew and went to school with Huey Newton. And so it was kind of difficult for me to get in, because when he got shot and was in the hospital, I was one of the first officers to provide security at the hospital on him.
Yeah.
You know, so he and his family, they all, you know, knew me, and they knew me as law enforcement.
And well, Billy, let me ask you a question, if I could jump in here a second. But you as an undercover agent, undercover investigator, what are you allowed to do and not allowed to do? Well, let's just start out. What is your task? Are you there to get information only and then relay that back to the powers that be? Or what was the scope of your activity? That was
you hit the nail right on the head. The objective is to gather as much information as possible. And during the 60s, there were, the Vietnam War was going on. And so you had people that were militant. You ran the gamut of people who were just peaceful protesters to those who were violent.
Well, tell me what could you not do? So you're an undercover investigator, because we're going to get down to the issue here of what the FBI appears to have been doing, first of all, in the Whitmer case. But what is it that you could not do? I'm sure there were certain activities that you were prohibited from participating in.
In a nutshell, break the law. However, you had to use your imagination in that, because most of the time in going to the demonstrations, They were breaking the law when the police would say this was an unlawful assembly. And the groups would go downtown San Francisco or other places, smashing windows, destroying private property.
But let me ask you, would you have crossed the line in your duties if, as an infiltrator, an undercover investigator participating in these group activities, if you actually provided money for something to do something illegal, if you actually led the charge, so to speak, to do something illegal, if you were encouraging others to do something illegal, if you are actually a participant in fomenting, inciting, or giving fuel and feed to the activity, have you crossed the line?
You know, Rob, that is a real interesting question, because that would have, you know, in a court of law, you know, the defense attorney and the prosecution would both argue. But the question that you asked about providing money and doing things like that, that is actually facilitating a criminal activity. And in facilitating an activity, that is criminal.
Well, then what the defense...
Prosecution,
I'm sorry.
The prosecution would say, well, the investigator was just doing the job to see if these people were going to commit the crime, you know. But
well, I mean, and if that's what the prosecutor is going to say, but isn't the defense going to allege?
And the defense is going to say that no, the government, and that's the way they always come, the government actually committed the crime, because my defendant would not have been able to commit the crime if the government did not provide the means and the access and the wherewithal for them to commit the crime.
So in other words, it would constitute entrapment, in which case a
prosecution, in my opinion.
Smoke. Well, they prove entrapment, then the prosecution is done, I suppose, at that point. Well, let me ask you here. I guess what we have here is we don't have a bright line. We don't have this. We got a fuzzy gray area of when an informant, well, not an informant, but I guess maybe an informant too. I mean, because obviously if an informant is used to entrap a defendant, then it becomes the same defense argument of entrapment. But let me take this to the situation, first of all, with Gretchen Whitmer. So obviously you've got these guys who get arrested for a conspiracy to commit a kidnapping. That's a crime. And conveniently busted just a few weeks before the election in a state which is a critical must-have state by Joe Biden. Just a few little background things here. But we have almost from what our information indicates from various news stories, which seem to be pretty well vetted, as many or just about as many FBI informants as there are defendants. So if we've got 12 defendants and we've got 10 or 11 informants, because we don't know the exact number here, and the investigation should indicate, it seems to be indicating here that defense is raising this, that the FBI agents handling the informants directed every move. Julie Kelly writes, quote, they funded the training and reconnaissance trips, even organized a national militia conference in Ohio in June 2020 to lure potential accomplices. And then they go on to say that the attorneys also have communications, which they can prove now in court that the kidnappers alleged actually pushed back on the FBI's plan on several occasions to not go forward. So let's assume that what I've said is fact. If you were sitting there as a judge and you had to make a summary decision or part of a jury, is what I described sound like entrapment?
If I were the judge, I would say that was entrapment.
I mean, and is it even close? I mean, is it, it doesn't, I mean, once you start funding things and you start encouraging the behavior, It seems like, you know, that by itself, it seems like maybe you've crossed the line, but that's my thought.
Well,
you couldn't.
Again,
you couldn't
having, see, having worked undercover and having, you know, worked, you know, and gotten inside the different groups, to fund and to plant the idea to do certain things, that is when you cross the line. Because they may not be thinking about doing certain things until the idea was provided by the government. You know, when I say the government, that would be me. So I'm working with, I've got several informants, and I say, hey, let's bomb this particular building. If I say that and then provide the equipment and then they actually carry it out, I have been trapped, you know.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And in the Whitmer case where the FBI agents, we don't know where the idea to kidnap Whitmer came from. But if the defense says, well, that idea came from Joe Schmo, who is an FBI agent, and they said, well, I don't know about that. And they keep pushing and pushing, because I've seen that happen where government and, you know, the supervisor, you know, the investigators, supervisor says, hey, see if you can get them to do X, Y, and Z. That's clearly entrapment, because now you're pushing them to commit a crime. The defense will say that, hey, my defendant would not have committed the crime if the government didn't create the idea. The prosecution will say, well, they were inclined to do that.
Right.
So that's where the back and that's where, you know, you have the back and forth.
Let me ask you a question here, though, that applies to Whitmer, does not apply to the January 6th thing, and then we're going to move on to January 6th. But if you have informants or undercover, they're working either paid or unpaid to save their skin, as you said in the case of informants, and they approach in number the amount of defendants. So let's go back to my example here. So you've got, and I can't even remember how many were actually arrested in the kidnapping, alleged kidnapping conspiracy, but let's say it's 8. And you've got 7 informants or undercover people that are in this group that is now 15. Is there a point at which the sheer amount of intrusion and undercover activity by the government no longer is just in an informing capacity? It now becomes behavior. It becomes participation. I mean, so the group of 15 sits down and says, well, let's take a vote whether we should kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. Well, if the 7 informants and or undercover people vote yes, I mean, hasn't a mere vote and by their sheer number, which would sway the vote of this group, constitute participation and entrapment?
It would seem. You know, you being an attorney, you know that in, you know, in jury trials, they say you have to find beyond a reasonable doubt, or what would a reasonable person think or believe. A reasonable person, and, you know, I'm being a reasonable person, I would think that if you have more of the defendants that are saying, nah, let's not do this, and you have the government people saying, yeah, let's do this, and then they go ahead, I would say, as a reasonable person, that the government was the one that really pursued the crime.
Right. Well, it would seem here, that it appears that in Michigan here, that the mere number of informants or undercover people, and I'm going to lump them together because they may be the Crips and the Bloods, but when the police show up, they're on the same side.
So, right.
So the mere number of them, which would be a significant amount in proportion to the total group involved, that their mere presence among the non-informants, it seems like you just can't help but come to the conclusion that they become participants in an entrapment activity by the sheer volume of those that are involved, which I'm going to segue to January 6th now. is not a situation there. We're gonna shift gears here a little bit because it appears to be more impromptu. The numbers of people involved would seem to indicate that, and the lesser amount of organization, I guess you would say, would seem to indicate that there is a lesser role. Doesn't mean it wasn't somehow fomented by either undercover informants or BLM or Antifa that was participating and masquerading as Trump supporters, but certainly fueled. It seems like that because of the FBI's behavior, whether it's in Trump, whether it's the Ashley Biden diary thing, whether it's the reports coming from the FBI agents that these people are engaged in behavior that is, untoward? That's how the old biblical word. It's
untoward, yeah.
Untoward behavior. That it seems like it's getting to beg the question based on their kind of besmirched image here that they may well have played a role, not the least of which, and I think you pointed this out to me, that the agent in charge of the kidnapping infiltration, Duan Tuano, I think was his name, Don Tuano, I have a hard time saying it, that particular FBI person who was overseeing the Whitmer matter within a week, and keeping in mind this is October 2020, so within a week or two, i.e. right after the election, gets transferred to head up the DC field office, which now is only just a very short period of time prior to January 6th. I mean, is that a bit curious to you?
That it's not really curious to me, because the reason they did that in my mind is that, hey, he's our dirty tricks guy. You know, he knows how to put in what we would call agent provocateurs. He knows how to conduct these types of dirty trick operations, and I'll call them dirty tricks. You know, going back to the old Watergate, you know, the operation that he had in Watergate.
And he had success. And he had success in Michigan.
Exactly. And so they said, hey, we want you to come to D.C. And I'm just, you know, this is my hypothesis. We want you to come to D.C. and we want to run some disruption operations so that we can get the other people, you know, which would be the Trump people, deplorables, we can catch them doing certain acts.
Yeah.
And what they did, he was the guy for that operation.
And you know, Bill,
so it's not curious.
I thank you for correcting. I was being kind, I think, when I used the word curious. And we don't have much time left here, but I do want to throw one other question out to you here. What is your comment with regards to the situation that we have now, a January 6th congressional committee wanting to subpoena everybody and their brother, doing an investigation that actually really should be the FBI's job because this is criminal in nature, when the FBI itself has closed its investigation stating that there was no organized conspiracy to overturn the election and close their investigation? Thoughts?
They have no authority. They have no jurisdiction and or authority to conduct criminal investigations. What they're doing is completely a political smear campaign. And it's to take Donald Trump out of contention for 2024. Anyone that has been involved with Donald Trump's inner circle, they want to delegitimize him. And what I've been hearing is that they want to use the 14th Amendment to keep people who are Trump supporters, who are political, you know, who have Congress people, senator, you know, elected officials, that's what I'm looking for, elected officials that support Donald Trump, they want to use the 14th Amendment to try to knock them out, to keep them from running. And so that's what this is all about, that January 6th committee.
Yeah. Hey, Billy, we are all out of time here. I'll leave you with the last 30 seconds before we jump back to the program. Anything you'd like to say in that last, in your concluding remarks, as they would say?
Well, we need to pray for our country because we are battling against spiritual forces that are purely evil. And the battle lines are becoming clearer and clearer and clearer every day in my mind. And so I just say that all your listeners that are believers is to, what is it, 2 Chronicles 7:14?
Mm-hmm.
If my people, we need to do that. So that's only we've got to turn to God.
Well, that's
this battle is a spiritual battle, and all the other things that we can do, we need to do, but submitting and surrendering to our Lord and Savior.
Thank
is
you.
Is the answer?
Yeah, it absolutely is, Billy, and thank you so much. We'll talk later on, but my only question is, I know why I couldn't infiltrate the Black Panthers. I'm just not sure why you couldn't infiltrate the Black Panthers.
So, well, again, like I said, you know, I was a
no. It was a joke. I just kind of kidding with
it. No. But I'm serious. You know, because I couldn't really do. I could not get in the Panthers because they knew. You know, they knew me and they knew that I was law enforcement. But the other groups, I could get in, and I saw what they were talking about, and I was able to relay that, and the information that I provided was submitted to the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah, and well, and you know, I mean, the one of the biggest oxymorons in all of this is SDS. I was near their headquarters in Ann Arbor, Michigan. In the 70s, that they had the gall to actually call themselves Students for a Democratic Society. So anyway, Billy Sims, thank you so much for joining us here on the Robin Walter Show. God bless you, brother, and hope to have you back on not too far down the road.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Adios.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to The Robin Walter Show, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Or go to robinwalter.net and use PayPal. That's The Robin Walter Show, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Or robinwalter.net and use PayPal. Thank you.
We are back in the Robin Walter Show here, just concluding a couple of comments following this interview of Billy Sims. And rather interesting, we didn't fit this in, we were running short on time. But he indicated back in the days before the cell phones, and he was working undercover in San Francisco. He had landed in a group that was planning to kidnap Dianne Feinstein. That's just how long she's been around. But he did his job, called his supervisor from a payphone, because they didn't have cell phones, and said, hey, they're getting ready to kidnap Dianne Feinstein. And then the appropriate parties escorted her out of wherever she was and led to safety. But what I think was kind of amazing about that, and I was thinking about it after we got done talking, was this is how far left the left is. Yes, today they don't like Dianne Feinstein because they consider her too conservative and she's anything but. But the far left has been so far left for so long, they even wanted to kidnap her decades ago and get rid of her. Wow, that's pretty amazing. But I want to finish with a couple of comments here. First of all, I'm really three things here. As Billy pointed out, he believes, and I agree with him, that the FBI role and activity in Michigan was nothing more than a political stunt to, A, keep Donald Trump from winning, and, B, begin to the process of tarnishing him if should he return. He wants to return, and hence maybe whatever activity they participated in on January 6th to just smear his name as much as possible. And do I believe that the election was stolen? Absolutely. There is not any question about it. Not in my mind. And does Trump want to return? Yeah. Are they afraid of him? Absolutely. The guy is the Energizer Bunny. He doesn't quit. Because after all, whenever there's a theft, does not the rightful owner want his goods back? If that's all it really amounts to. Point number two. Congress can avoid looking into the FBI's complicity if they were complicit on January 6th to some degree. They can avoid that by handling the investigation themselves. Now, they're throwing out subpoenas, but they're a civil operation. They're not a criminal court. So when you get to a criminal case, the degree to which you can go into and investigate far exceeds. The subpoena power is far stronger. And I didn't mention that in the Whitmer case, we already have three FBI agents now who are not willing to testify, but I think they're going to get dragged in. I don't know how they can avoid it. I'm not sure what excuse they use, because that is now a criminal matter against the alleged kidnappers. But see, Congress can do whatever it wants being run by Nancy Pelosi into not looking into FBI complicity. So that's why they've moved on and taken over. Number three, the FBI, who is supposed to be doing its job, doing an alleged criminal investigation into the spirited January 6th protest, can they not do the investigation without exposing themselves, exposing their own participation? Is that why they closed the case on January 6th as it relates to concluding that there was no cover, there was no organization, no organized attempt to overthrow the government or take over the government? In other words, there was no insurrection. And then they hand it off to the congressional committee. I don't know, but I want to finish with this little tidbit from my past. When I was 14 or 13, I don't know if I was a, I started school early. I think I was a senior in high school or maybe 12 years old, eighth grade. And I wrote the FBI, told them I wanted to work for the FBI. I wrote J. Edgar Hoover. Now, whatever you think of J. Edgar Hoover, good, bad, or indifferent, that was who I wrote, and I got a letter back, which I truly believe to be from him. It was not stamped. It was a true inked signature with his name. Now, it certainly could have been somebody else writing his name for him, but somebody signed it, actually did sign it, J. Edgar Hoover. And they were pleased to know of my interest, blah, blah, blah. And I told them I was whatever, 13 years. I should have saved it. Probably was worth some money. But then, much later in life, after deciding I was going to go to law school and going back, I don't know, years later, I wrote them back to state that I was still looking into applying for a job after I completed law school. But I didn't say I'm still looking into it. I just simply said I'm looking into applying. In other words, everything was present tense. And what did I get back? I got a letter from them that said, "We are pleased to hear of your continued interest in the FBI." They had saved my letter. They saved the letter from the 12 or 13-year-old kid. Now, I wasn't upset. I was impressed. I thought, man, this is cool. This is the organization I want to work for. And the fact of the matter is I delayed law school. And when I got out of law school, I was actually too old, believe it or not, to go into the part of the FBI that I wanted to be in. So I have come to the conclusion here, and this is biblically based, that it does not matter how great an organization is, and it doesn't matter how good and solid the Constitution or the governing documents are, if in fact the people running that organization are bad from the pit of hell or part of the deep state, it doesn't really matter what the organization is or was or what the Constitution is or we believed it to be until these recent years. You will have bad people perverting and subverting the very essence of our American, our constitutional republic. So what do you do? What do you do when you have entities that are part of the government, which may be part of the, as I said, today's SS, officially the deep state, that are so deep you can't get rid of them? Can you reform them? I thought of only one way. Only one way. You've got to drive them out of business, so to speak. What can President Trump do if he were reelected, or some other bona fide, lots of cojones Republican is in office? What can they do to bring them around and other renegade federal agencies? This is what they can do. Not sign the budget bill. Unless the budget bill involves a 25% cut in the budget of the FBI or the DOJ. Who knows? Maybe the IRS. You know, they were pretty bad under Obama. He weaponized them and probably will be back at it once they hire all these new agents and they get more money. And then watch what they do. And if they continue the persecution and prosecution of people simply exercising their First Amendment rights, they're doing undercover jobs, informant jobs, setting up people for defeat by contriving circumstances that suit the political leanings and desires of a Joe Delphire Biden or a left-wing successor. You do what the only thing that you can do with any left-wing organization, you have to hit them where it hurts. The only spanking you can ultimately give to the left if they don't respond to the gospel or common sense is to cut them off at the knees financially. Take them down, pick the number, 10%, 25%, 50%, whip them, spank them into shape, and see if they behave, and if they don't, keep cutting the budget. Well, then, you know what you got to do. Got to pray 2 Thessalonians 3:2 that we would be delivered from wicked and unreasonable men. And that includes women. But there's something you always should be doing in addition to being in the Word, and that is to sit tall in the saddle. Because remember, you ride for the brand. The brand of Jesus Christ. God bless you. We will see you all on the next podcast.